Ellis. All right. Make sure they're good and blindfold. Wes, you probably have to take your glasses off. So maybe the blindfold isn't necessary. Don't know. If it was my glasses, I would, right now, right here, just use that. Make sure they can't see. Don't kill them or cut off circulation. But your job is to just watch. Okay? I just want you to watch what's about to happen. Just be good witness bystanders. Okay? Make sure they can't see. Try to scare them. And if they jump, then they can see you. No, I'm kidding. All right, guys, can you see? You're in front of the whole congregation now. Don't lie. Can you see? All right, so what I want you ladies to do is I want you to, gentlemen, stretch out your hands. One, just one. And ladies, I want you to take that hand and I want you to lead them left off the stage and all the way around the sanctuary back to stage right. Nobody move out of their way. Just watch. No, just right there is good. No, bring them back up on stage. Come on. We got time. All right, now you can take off Jordan's blindfold, and you can take off Wes's blindfold, and you guys are done. Thanks so much. Give them a round of applause. Hey, hey. You made it, man. You lived in everything. Knew we wouldn't kill you. All right. We get to the end of the book of John, and we're in the Gospel of John, chapter 21. And it's this thing that happens, and we're like, why is this happening again? We've already seen this. Jesus goes to a body of water. Peter is in a boat in the water with some other fishermen, and they're fishing, and they're not catching anything. And Jesus is on the shore, and they see Jesus, but they don't have any idea who he is. And Jesus says to them, hey, you're not catching anything. Toss your net on the other side of the boat. Maybe you'll catch something. He doesn't say maybe. He says, you'll catch fish if you throw your net on the other side of the boat. So they throw their net on the other side of the boat. They catch a whole bunch of fish, and they recognize Jesus as the Messiah, the resurrected Lord. And Peter dives out of the boat and takes a swim to the shore and discovers Christ there standing. It's a mirror event. The same thing happened the first time Peter ever met Jesus. Peter was in a boat, and he was with other fishermen. Peter and Andrew normally are together, and Jesus sees them, and they're not catching any fish, even though they're professional fishermen. And Jesus tells them how and what to do as far as catching fish, and they do what he says, and they catch a bunch of fish. And in that miracle, they see who Jesus is. So it's as if in this incident, at the very, very end of the Gospel of John in chapter 21, this resurrected encounter with Jesus, we are seeing the same event that we saw earlier. Why would there be two of the same events? Why is it so important for Jesus to suddenly kind of nostalgically bring us and the disciples back to really where it all started in discipleship? Peter swims to the shore, and when he gets there, him and Jesus have breakfast together. They sit down and they eat a little something next to the campfire there. And then when they're finished eating and probably the other disciples have joined them, Jesus and Peter go off on a walk and they have a little conversation together. And in chapter 21, beginning in verse 15, this is what the conversation looks like. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my lambs. A second time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, then tend my sheep. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything and you know that I love you. Jesus said to him, then feed my sheep. For truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and to go wherever you wished to go. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you don't want to go. He said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And after this, Jesus said to him, follow me. I'm going to stop there, guys. I know there's more on the screen, but I'm going to stop there. It's a crazy incident that's happening here. Jesus is having this conversation with Peter and he says, Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? A lot of people get caught up in this and there are many different words for love in the Greek language, and that's the language the Bible was originally written in. And so people get caught up because there are different words about love, but really in the Gospel of John, the writer of John, he uses these words all the time interchangeably. He uses words for agape and phileo and just interchanges them. He doesn't use one for specific times and others not. So really, if you read the Gospel of John and you're reading it in Greek, you wouldn't really go, whoa, there are different words for love here. I think what's more important is that here Jesus is with Peter after the resurrection, and him and Peter are sitting there, and Jesus looks over at him and says, Peter, do you love me? That's interesting in itself. But Peter's like, well, this is a neat little moment for us here. This is, you know, yeah, Jesus, I love you. But then he asks him a second time. And Peter might be thinking, why the second time? I don't. Yes, Jesus, I love you. And then the third time. You see, three is a very important number for Peter. It's a very important number because it might make us think of something, and it most certainly makes Peter think about something, and that is that there was another declaration Peter had made three times. And that is that when it came to the cross event, when it came to the crucifixion and it was time for Jesus to die, this man Peter who had said to Jesus, I will go to death before I ever stop following your leadership, Peter three times denied that he had anything to do with this Jesus. Can you imagine Peter? Maybe he had hoped that Jesus wouldn't bring it up. Some of us do that, right? When there's something between us and another person, we try to just leave it alone and hope it'll go away. We just hope nobody will bring it up and maybe it'll just get buried after a while and we won't have to deal with the hurt. But Jesus loves Peter enough to not let it lay. And so he asked Peter three times to remind him of his denial. What's interesting is that Peter might sit there and initially he might look at Jesus' face and Jesus might wear that half grin that says, yeah, I know. Even while I was being crucified, your denial of me didn't go unnoticed. The most shameful and guilt-ridden moments of Peter's life are now on display because of Jesus' three-time question. But what's amazing is that now Peter sits here and he looks into Jesus' face. And even as Jesus reminds Peter, even as Jesus reveals to Peter that he knows of all of his shame, that he knows of all of his shortcomings, that he knows of all of his guilt, even in the moment where he highlights his brokenness, he's inviting him to love. Even in that moment where Peter is reliving the most horrifying moments, the most shameful moments, that thing that he wishes to hide the most, right there Jesus is still saying, will you love me? Do you love me? Because you see, this is who Jesus is. He's the one who sees us in all of our brokenness and in all of our shame. He's seen us in our worst moments. He knows all the things that we'd love to bury and let lay and never bring up again. Jesus sees all those things and he still invites us to love and be loved. That's who the resurrected Christ is. And he looks into the face of a betrayer as much as Judas, because he denied him three times in his greatest hour of need. And he says, will you love me? Do you love me? An invitation of relationship. I think that's one of the most powerful things about this story that, by the way, I read a lot of commentaries and tried to research and found almost nothing on, is that more than concentrating on the word love, it's that threefold pattern in Jesus saying, yes, Peter, I noticed. Yeah, Peter, I saw that you betrayed me, that you denied me in the midst of my greatest hour of need and in my greatest hour of leadership to the cross. You decided you didn't want to go there. You decided you didn't want to follow me to that place. You decided you'd had enough and that you were finished, and so you denied me three times. Peter, I know your brokenness, but I still want you to know my love. And I still want you to know the life of loving me. I think it's also important that he brought that up because then he'll say this to Peter. It kind of sets up what he's going to say next. He says, then Peter, take care of my sheep. I love that in the Bible, human beings are compared to sheep. How many people in here have ever worked with sheep? Hands-on worked with sheep. Raise your hand if you've ever really worked with sheep long-term. Okay. Sheep. Are we recording this, guys? All right, we'll just delete it later. Are stupid. I grew up on a farm with sheep. Here's the first thing we do with the sheep. I would sit in a stall with the sheep for hours. Cute little fluffy things. Sit in it for hours with a sheep, and then you'd put a halter on its face and you'd think, I've sat for hours with this sheep. I've never hurt it. I've only fed it and watered it and taken care of it. So it's obviously going to trust me, and when I start to tug on it, it'll just come because it's not like I'm trying to hurt the thing. It should just follow me like a dog or something, right? Because I've spent so much time with it. No. You put a halter on a sheep and you begin to jerk, and you know what they do? They collapse their butt and sit on the ground. And you just pull, and their back muscles just strained, and then you're like, well, they must want to go the other way. So you just try to go the other way with them. No, they don't want to go that way either. They just sit and strain. They won't move. And then you're like, well, I guess I'll just take the halter off, and they'll probably run because they don't want to go my way. And you take the halter off, and then they stand up and just look at you. And you're like, why? This thing just knee-jerk reaction naturally just will not be led. Will not be led. Did you know that you can lead a sheep? I've done it. You can lead a sheep to a body of water. This is another sermon. Living water, running water, and that a sheep will die of thirst before it'll drink from a running stream. That's how dumb sheep are. And that's who we're compared to in Scripture. Love you. Jesus says to Peter, listen, I want you to take care of my sheep. I want you to take care of the people that follow me, because Peter, they're not going to want to follow. It's going to be a struggle for them to be led. I mean, did you see the ladies leading these guys? Did that look natural to you? Love you, Jordan and Wes, but it wasn't pretty. It wasn't that bad. Nobody fell on their face, but it wasn't pretty. There's a reason I got college students to do it. It's just awkward. It's, you know, we don't like to be led. We want to go our own way. We want to know the path that's before us and make our choices about which direction to turn. We're like sheep. It's not always that we have another destination in mind. We just want to figure it out for ourselves, and we don't want anybody telling us where to go. Sometimes somebody else say, do that. No, I'm not going to do that. Why did you want to do this? No, I'm just not doing what you told me to do. That's just, we got to deal with the fact that we seem to just knee-jerk not want to be led. And Jesus says to Peter, you're going to have to be a shepherd of sheep. But Peter, don't think you're above it. Because here's the thing. Peter, you remember when you were younger, you fastened your own belt and you went where you wanted to go. That's the whole reason that Peter denied Jesus. He denied Jesus because a young girl walked up to him and said, aren't you one of those that follow Christ? And you see, Peter knew where Jesus was going, right? He knew where Jesus was going. Jesus was going to get beat half to death, spit on, shamed. He was going to suffer. Then he was going to drag his own torture device up a hill and be butchered in front of the world for all the public to see. And Peter, maybe like some of us, said, that may be where Jesus is going, but I'm not going there. And so he denied Jesus. And then he did it again. And then he did it again. Now, I don't think that many of us will actually have to carry our own torture device upon a hill and be butchered in front of the whole world to see. But I do think that all of us will get to the place where we'll have to make a very difficult choice. And that is, will we really follow the leading of Christ or not? And Jesus had said to Peter all those years ago, over 3 years ago, follow me. And Peter had followed to a point. And then he'd said, Jesus, you might be going that way, but you're not leading me that way. And Jesus knows that he had faltered and fallen. And Jesus still lovingly looks him in the face and invites him to be loved and to love. But then Jesus says, but hear me. You're going to lead sheep, and never forget that you've been one of them. When you were younger, you chose your own path. We saw where that got you. But now as you grow, you will stretch out your hand and you won't fasten your own belt anymore. And you will not go where you want to go. You will go where you don't want to go. Someone else will lead you. It's interesting to find out that Peter will, as he matures in Christ, become one of the most powerful anchors for the life of the church in history. Christ called Peter, in a way, the one who would build the church on the rock of the good news. And Peter did it. Fantastic things. But you know how Peter died? On a cross. Because the decision came again later as to whether or not he would follow the leading of Jesus. And the second time, he made the right choice. because he'd grown. And Jesus says this, the last two words that Jesus says to Peter in this passage are the same two words that he met Peter with in the beginning. Follow me. Follow me. And this time let me do the leading, Peter, if you don't mind. I think this is a powerful story. I've never really studied it that in depth. I've never preached on it. But it's been powerful to me this week. Because, listen, I have places in my life that I don't like to go to very often. I've got mistakes and regrets that, you know, if I'm not careful, become anchors of shame. I mean, we all do things that we're not proud of, and sometimes we end up with these broken places, these broken pieces, these shameful shadows that fill up our identity. And we hope that we can just let them lay, and yet the longer we let them lay, the more they poison the soil of our hearts. Christ loves you enough to bring that up to you only to remind you that he still wants love. He doesn't bring those things out in us. He doesn't bring them up in us because he wants to shame us, but because he wants to heal us by inviting us to be a part of his life again and again and again. So this morning, if you've never been a Christian before, or you've been a Christian, it seems like 100 times, if you've told Jesus this far no further before, or maybe for the first time, maybe you've told him this far no further and you've got a rut dug and you just can't seem to get out of it and you think all hope is lost, Christ will never stop bringing up your scars so he can heal them and inviting you to love this morning. But hear me, the invitation to follow is an invitation to recognize that to journey with the resurrected Christ is going to be to open up your hand, stretch it out empty, and go even where you don't want to go. Jude is 2 weeks and 3 days old, and he does not want to go to the changing table. I don't know why. I wouldn't want mess in my pants. But he seems to know now where that area is. And he screams all the way there. And Katie laughs. And I lay him down and he screams and screams and screams. And I'm saying, why don't you want to go here? I'm just trying to clean you up. Sometimes the very places we don't want to go when Christ tries to lead us are the very places that we'll need to find ourselves to be clean and whole and healed. That's why Jesus ends by saying, follow me. And this time, Peter, let me do the leading. What area of your life are you still determining the leadership in? Is it a relationship? Is it a job? Is it your future? Is it your education? Is it finances? Is it family? What burden do you carry because you've been leading yourself a long time and it seems like you stumble a lot for thinking you know where you're going? But you just can't quite let it go. And so you deny and you deny and you deny and you've decided this far no further. And the shame has begun to build and the pain and the guilt and it lays and it rots and the soil of your heart has become a very tainted place. This morning, Christ wants to raise that issue so he can heal you of it. And invite you to be loved and to love. That's what you were made for. To follow him with an open, outstretched arm so he can lead you to lands you could never dreamed of. Just as he did to Peter. I want to ask the band to come forward. We're going to sing a song. I'm going to ask you to remain seated. You know, Mary said this last week and it was so good. I've pondered on it all week. We've sat around a lot at our house this week with the TV off and just silence other than a beautiful sleeping baby when he sleeps. And I've thought about how little we take time to just give attention to the needs of our hearts. So we're going to sing a song about the way that God shepherds us and leads us. And while we do that, I encourage you to look at the words and maybe make this your prayer. But I also want you to spend some time calculating where your leadership has gotten you in the areas of your life. If there are areas of our lives where we have taken the lead time and time again, only to be left stumbling and disappointed, whatever that looks like, I want to offer us some space to say, Christ, I've been ashamed and I've been guilt-ridden, but somehow you still stare me in the face and invite me to love. I want to follow you. I don't want to halfway follow you. I don't want to follow you to the point and then stop and say, nope, I'm not going there, because that has failed me so many times. God, I want to stretch out the hand of my heart, open it palm upward and say, lead me. Because I recognize that sometimes you know the places that I need, even if they're the places I don't want. This is what it means to be a follower of the resurrected Jesus. And it can be a place of fear and trembling. I think just for a moment I might have seen some fear and trembling in those two guys up here when I said blindfold them. But it is a beautiful place to find ourselves in the middle of the love of the resurrected Jesus. Never lead us astray. Let's worship and spend some time pondering our trust in the resurrected Messiah.